This is Leo. I'm speaking on Friday, June 30th, and I've got senior climatologist Kenny Blumenfeld from the Minnesota DNR on the phone with me. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. We had a pretty intense discussion last week, you and I did, about how dry it had been, and you were, you know, setting the stage for maybe we were going to reverse that trend considerably, moderately. You weren't quite sure. I think I just off the air told you that at my weather station, well, we're collecting rainfall data for the Coco Raz citizen monitoring program. We got 2.5 inches since last Friday, and there were places that got more and got less than us. What any comment on what you see unfolded in the precipitation patterns this week?
Yeah, so I'm glad you got the rain. You know, it was last weekend was pretty good for much of, not all of, but it was good for much of Minnesota. We got, you know, with the exceptions of some very isolated flooding from heavy thunderstorms that just wouldn't budge, and that was mostly in northwest Minnesota, parts of northeast Minnesota, central Minnesota got hit with just, you know, multiple rounds of thunderstorms, some of which provided a very good soaking rain, not too much in the way of runoff. And so they were able to make up some ground. Basically, the area from, let's say, I guess it would say from the Brainerd area, kind of in and around Brainerd, and then over to Duluth, and then crawling up the shore. You know, that whole area really got close to 3 inches, 2 to 3 inches since we spoke last week. And then there are some areas that got much more.
Yeah.
So in the Island Lake area around Duluth,
exactly,
they got, you know, 5.5 to 6 inches of rain.
And is it on Thursdays that there is an update on the drought monitor program? I know that the weather forecasters were saying last night that we were still in moderate drought designation on most of the North Shore.
Yeah. Yeah. So the U.S. drought monitor is updated every Thursday. Basically what it is, it's an interesting process where there's a drought mitigation center, National Drought Mitigation Center, that's affiliated with the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, and they draw up a draft map, and then they share it with various entities that represent different states, all the different states, and they get a little bit of feedback and tweak their maps, and then they're produced for the public, released for the public on Thursdays. And the consensus was that we're going to wait and see. The rain that most areas got was substantial, but really only put a dent in the drought and didn't knock the drought away, really, in too many anywhere, except maybe that Island Lake area northwest of Duluth. And possibly in, you know, central and western Lake County, where there were some heavier precipitation totals. If there's evidence that the rain actually went into the ground and helped replenish streams, maybe there would be some improvement there. But, you know, even with that precipitation, especially coming in 1 to 2 inches, as the weekend ended, that just wasn't enough to remove the large deficits that had been building up over the last 6 weeks. So the authors of the drought monitor map decided we're just going to kind of keep things as is. And in fact, in parts of southeastern Minnesota, where they didn't get any precipitation of note last weekend, the drought actually expanded. So now you have moderate drought kind of covering it. It's got an interesting shape. If you look at the map of Minnesota, it kind of has a prong that goes from west to east, from west central through into east central Minnesota, and then it fans out to cover the Arrowhead and the kind of similar shape that you have in southeastern Minnesota. And then there are the two areas of severe drought that still exist. One is on the south end of Lake Mille Lacs and includes, you know, runs to about Brainerd and then into this area, you know, they're around St. Cloud on one end and maybe Rush City or so on the other end. And then there's the little bullseye that extends into northwest Wisconsin that's centered on the Duluth Superior area, and that does extend up into Two Harbors. So technically, your current rating is a severe drought.
Oh, did not catch that. Okay.
Yeah, it's a slightly darker, if you look on those drought monitor maps, it's a slightly darker shade of orange, and it's a kind of second drought level. So your first is moderate drought, and it goes up to exceptional, which is the fourth level. The precipitation that you continued to get over the week certainly helped. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing some improvements. We're not going to be seeing the drought monitor authors erasing drought in northeastern Minnesota, but they might shave some of it back. Some of that moderate drought next week might get pulled back a little bit, and you might see that D2 or severe drought area shrink a little bit, especially up along the North Shore where there was a lot of rain.
Right.
But other than that, you know, it kind of depends on what happens this week. We've got a hot air mass moving in, and that's obviously really good at removing water. And so now the race is on. Are we going to get enough precipitation to offset this warmth and this heat coming in, or is the drought going to kind of start running away again?
There you go. And people, of course, impose their own perceptions of what they need to have for weather on holidays. And Two Harbors has this giant festival every year called Heritage Days, and everybody hopes that, yes, let's relieve the drought, but just not on that weekend. But all of that aside, Kenny, I know that you are always very modest about paying too much attention to long-term seasonal forecast of, you know, the probabilities of warmer or wetter, drier or cooler than usual. But now that we have El Nino being announced as entering the picture, I'm trying not to muddy the waters, but does that add any concern to you? Because I hear that in the upper Great Lakes area, the tendency might be for it to be a warmer and drier period when El Nino is taking over.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, one of the things we've been learning, so I've been doing kind of a deep look into El Nino and La Nina, which is its counterpart. And, you know, for those who don't know, what are these terms? It's not a storm. It's not, El Nino is not even a weather system. It's just a pattern, and it's related to warm water in the tropical equatorial Pacific, and especially on the kind of central and eastern side of the equatorial Pacific. So off the coast of South America, you know, off the coast of Peru and Ecuador, and then extending west about 1,000 miles in either side of the equator there for a few hundred miles is kind of the El Nino monitoring region. And when the water gets warm there tends to be a response in the atmosphere that some of the trade winds slow down. That's the winds that go from east to west in those regions. So those winds slow down, and that kind of throws a big bottleneck in all of the weather patterns that we find, especially in the Western Hemisphere, but sometimes over the entire globe. And you end up kind of with a different situation. One of the things that we've noticed as we've looked into El Nino and La Nina is that there really is no definite El Nino response. What we're finding is that there is a tendency for warmer winters and drier winters during El Nino than La Nina. But what's really important is where you are in that process. In years where you come out of La Nina and go into El Nino, you tend to have a lot of La Nina conditions initially during the year, and then kind of a transition towards El Nino conditions. But so, hot and dry summers can be pretty common during that transition. By contrast, when you go from El Nino to La Nina, you have really cool summers on average.
Yeah.
And so it kind of depends on where you are in the process. And then there's also a difference if a year is just dominated by El Nino. So right now, I would say we're looking for the El Nino effect to start taking hold at some point, because we know that El Nino is now active in the Pacific Ocean. And that would normally start to increase the precipitation, but there's often a lot of lag in these. I mean, the ocean is huge. It has tremendous memory, and it takes a very long time for changes that are starting to be observed in the ocean to actually, you know, propagate through the atmosphere. So we might not actually notice the weather difference from El Nino here for several months. And that might be one of the reasons that these transitions to and from are so important, as yes. opposed to just sort of saying, oh, when there's El Nino, blank happens.
Exactly why I was curious, because I thought if there's a lag effect, we all know in a place that has relatively short summers anyway, there's a difference right. between warming up in July and August and maybe in September, October. We've run out of time, Kenny, and I know that was just dipping our toes in the warmer El Nino waters, but I'd love it if you'll probably be able to give us more of a sense of how it's, moving up in and taking more of a role in our future weather as we go deeper into El Nino. And you'll be able to do that with Katja in the weeks to come. And I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, happy to help out. And just a quick note, bring your umbrellas on the 4th. That's all I'll say about that. Enjoy the weekend. And
you heard it here. Excellent.
All right.
Thank you, Kenny. You take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
Take care.
That's Kenny Blumenfeld, senior climatologist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. You'll hear him most Fridays, sometimes Pete Boulay, his colleague. And this is Leo for KTWH.